welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Monday, September 13th, 2010. Sam Minter here, and I've got Yvonne Bo with me as usual. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So we've got four exciting topics for you today. So let me run them down real quick so you know what you're in for. We're going to talk a little bit about the balkanization of the internet. We're going to talk a little bit about software licenses. There was a relevant court ruling that happened earlier this week. Then we're going to talk about the BP announcing their findings on the oil spill and the kinds of things that came out. And we'll finish it up with the little bit of controversy that happened over the last week on this guy in Florida who was threatening to burn a bunch of Korans. But anyway, let's start off with the balkanization of the internet. Yvonne, you suggested this topic as you'd recently read some stuff on this. You want to give us the startup and then we'll discuss?
Well, I guess the article that I was reading was talking about how across the world, the internet, you know, when the internet was first made, it was a freewheeling, open, interconnected society, and everybody was able to access everything, and there were no censorship, no anything. And as the years have rolled along, it's definitely not that anymore. I mean, you've got China that has created this great gigantic firewall around almost everybody with an internet connection in the country. You've got other countries doing the same in terms of trying to firewall and trying to control access. There were also, for example, showing how certain new applications are actually balkanizing the internet to some extent. One of the examples that was brought in was Facebook. Facebook, for example, has its own proprietary communication system, proprietary chat, proprietary other things that actually, if you're not there, it's like almost going back in time a little bit to how AOL was into certain respects. And I'm like, you know, my thing about this, and even when we're talking about some of the people are talking about how iPhone apps, for example, also a little bit segregate and other things. I mean, I guess seeing how government control has crept into a lot of these, or not even government control, but some controls are crept in. And even some of the talk, for example, about net neutrality, for example, about people being able to prefer traffic for it to go and others not to go. My thing is, I see a trend that, I don't know, it's problematic, but I'm not sure what the net effect will be at the end. So, at this moment.
I mean, here's where I see all this. I mean, first of all, it's not necessarily a new thing. Basically, they've called it, I've heard it called by a number of different names, the dark net, the invisible internet, blah, blah, blah. Basically, anything behind something you have to sign into, you know, is not
right.
Accessible necessarily by, you know, your happy dandy search engines. And therefore, you know, if you just search, you're not necessarily going to get it. It's isolated in a way. You have to be a member of something, or, you know, in some cases it's free sign up, in some cases it's paid, you know, in some cases it's invitation only, whatever. But in any case, it's not generally available. And even if they let the search engines in, which some of these guys do, you get there and you get a teaser page and you have to sign up. You know, this is not necessarily new, but yes, I think it is increasing. And it's one of those things where, you know, I look at it and I wish it wasn't the case, but at the same time, I'm not sure that there's anything that can or should be quote unquote done about it. Because, you know, fundamentally, yeah, okay, let's take these in two different tacks, because I think there are different issues at play. There's the governments doing various things, and then there's, you know, the Facebooks and, you know, various other people that want to put their content behind some sort of wall, whether it be a paywall or, you know, the kind of thing where Facebook does where it's free, but it's your friends and your associates and blah, blah, blah. You know, fundamentally, people like Facebook, I think, yeah, they should be able to do whatever the fuck they want. And, you know, the people decide whether or not it's a useful service to them. You know, I bemoan the old days of the internet where, you know, a universal resource locator, a URL, really was. You know, it was like there was content there and it was open and it was out there and it was, you know, in many cases forever. You know, I'm one who, you know, even with URLs as they were, you know, people could change the content there and the old content would be gone. You know, and that's kind of sad too, but it happens, you know, and I don't know, what are you going to do? Say, you know, hey, sorry, you can't have content behind a login. You know, I don't think so, you know?
No. And, no, I don't think so either, right? You know, but I think that some of the things that worry me a little bit about some of the segregation of traffic and a little bit also about some of the lack of interoperability, okay, mm-hmm. or lack of interconnectivity or the lack of ability to move from one service to another. Well, I mean, it used to be, for example, you know, like Facebook, for example. I mean, you use Facebook and say one day, well, I don't want to use Facebook anymore. How would you transfer your stuff to another social services platform? I mean, it's impossible. You're out.
Or I mean, it's not impossible, but it's difficult. And you know, there are tools that help make it easier, but it's still like, you know, Joe below Grandpa is not going to figure all that stuff out. They're tied to the platform. No. And we've mentioned this stuff before. I mean, if you start putting your information that you care about, whether it be your thoughts, your pictures, your movies, whatever, if you start putting them onto a service that is not directly under your control, then, duh, it's not directly under your control, and you are putting your trust in that other agency essentially completely. Now, you know, in my case, you know, I'll put pictures up on Flickr, I'll put movies up on YouTube, but you can be damn sure I have copies of them on my own computer, on my own hard drive.
Correct.
You know, I am not ever going to trust it completely to any of these services, and I have some offline backup going with Backblaze and stuff too, but it's a backup of what I have locally, you know, and maybe this is something that, you know, I'm an old fuddy-duddy or a curmudgeon, you know, but I don't feel like I can trust having the authoritative place where I store anything up in what they're calling the cloud now. Whether, and it doesn't matter which service it is, you know, it's still tying yourself to somebody that is, now realistically, okay, if I'm storing my stuff, let's say I'm storing my pictures at Flickr, yeah, just to pick a random example.
Sure.
Now, realistically, the chances of my computer going kablooey and erasing all my crap are greater than the chances of Flickr going kablooey and erasing all of my crap on there. I understand that. And that's why I have no problem with having things in multiple places and stuff like that. But on the other hand, you know, Flickr can go and decide that all of a sudden their terms of service, you know, don't allow you to have any photographs that have a picture of an item that's trademarked or copyrighted. So, you know, I have a picture that includes my Saturn. Oh my God, it's violating Saturn's, you know, intellectual property. I can't have that picture anymore. You know? And you know, they could decide that and poof, make my picture go away. And it might not even be them deciding that. It might be a court telling them they have to. You know, who the hell knows? And the main thing is, I just don't know. I mean, maybe it'll all be good. Maybe it'll all be wonderful. Maybe Flickr will live forever and it'll be wonderful and they will stand up and avoid those kinds of things, but maybe they won't, you know? And so I having that kind of stuff out there, part of it, I think you pinned it is, having easy ways in and out. Like some of those services, you know, there are a number of services that essentially are hard drives for you in the cloud. And right. You can pull your stuff in and out of that whenever you feel like, however you feel like, as much as you feel like. And I right. feel a lot more comfortable about those. There are other right. services out there that, you know, and, you know, Facebook is one example that you just mentioned, where if you said right now, I want to get out and put in someplace that on my local drive, a copy of absolutely everything that Facebook has on me, including the transcripts of all my chats, including everything that's ever been posted on my
wall. All my postings, everything, right.
You're not going to have an easy time doing that. There's not like a button you can push and have that happen, you know, and all the pictures and videos and everything else. We've talked before about Facebook. I mean, I have a presence on there, but my presence on there is automatic reposting of links back to my blog, which I control. And yes, I have my blog hosted somewhere, but I have backups of it that are posted. I have at pretty much all times, I have a clone of everything needed to reconstruct my entire website. If all of the people I use for hosting shut down or went away or whatever, I have everything I would need to reconstruct that elsewhere, you know? That's not necessarily true of Facebook. Like, even now, like, you know, yes, even me being conservative about, like, you know, my postings are just shadowing my blog. But on the other hand, I've commented on other people's posts. You know, people have posted things to my wall. I've responded to those things. All of those are sort of outside of that. And should I care? Should I not? I don't know. Most of this stuff is ephemeral and who gives a shit? But, like, a lot of people put stuff that they do give a shit about. And I think you're right. It's a disturbing, I think a lot of people are giving a lot away and without really realizing what they
know.
Are.
I think a lot of people don't realize it. That's what I feel.
Now,
it's just that they don't realize, you know, they see this application, they start using it, and they haven't really given much thought to any of this.
I mean, at the same time, I completely acknowledge that with this kind of technology, you know, my mom, some of my aunts and uncles, whatever, are like sharing stuff online that they never, ever would have been able to, or would have bothered to be able to do without share. And they gain value out of that, like, you know, they're posting pictures online, they're talking to friends, they're doing all kinds of stuff that even though yes, the technology existed that, you know, you can put up a web gallery and you can send a link to your friend and all of this stuff existed and could be done without this, but in a way that, you know, if you're not into the technology and understand what's going on, you never would have bothered. You know, and so it is an enabling technology, and people are doing a lot that they would never otherwise do, and that's cool. That's a good thing. I like that. It's just, I think there is a lot of danger in sort of having your online life inside of these entities that are not under your control, you know, and it does also have the downside of, you know, if you're putting a lot of stuff that's in a place that's, you know, invisible to the public internet, and of course, you know, if you're concerned about your privacy, that's a benefit to you. But at the same time,
yes,
it is sort of walling off significant chunks of knowledge and information from the general internet.
From,
you know, and in the case of your Facebook post about, you know, the pictures from your drunken party last night, maybe that's actually a good thing. But in the case of paywalls for like the London Times or whatever, you know, hey, that's valuable historical information, and you're basically shutting that information off from most of the world. You know, and I understand they're trying to make a profit, but, you know, whatever. But it's still, it has a downside as well. And I'm not sure that they're ending up finding out whether or not it's good for their bottom line either. That's yet to be seen, for the companies that have done that. And then, you know, we sort of skipped over, you've got your national governments like China, who are essentially, producing a sanitized version of the internet that they want their people to see. And that's pernicious in its own way. You know,
that also is creating certain issues. Not the same as what we're talking about, but more issues of, in terms of the ability for you to be able to get and communicate with certain people or groups or communities and to be able to gather information that you're looking for. That's the issue there.
Well, and I'd say it's only in a matter of degree. Obviously, China does their thing, and I know we've argued about this in the past as well, Yvonne, but like I'd say, you know, even in the U.S., you know, the fact that we go after the illegitimate copyright stuff and we try to shut down, sort of quote-unquote illegal sharing, and there are certain types of content that we're, you know, highly regulating. Like, if you're going to put, you know, porn on the net, you have to have all this legal information associated, and you have to register and blah, 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 and you have to prove that the people seeing are over a certain age. These aren't quite the same, but it's all regulating and restricting and trying to control what content exists and what content doesn't and who can access what. And fundamentally, all of that is, I think, antithetical to the notion of a really open internet, which was always, you know, somewhat pie in the sky notion. The whole, you know, the internet senses censorship as damage and routes around it. And and that's still true to a degree. I mean, you know, if, you know, in any of these cases, if you really want this stuff, you can get it. But, you know, it's made harder and harder. And effectively, if you make it only so that Uber geeks can do a certain thing, you've essentially taken it out of the realm of circulation of what, you know, grandma and grandpa can do. So,
you know, one thing that I was going to mention about the governments and you know, how different government acts, I found it kind of interesting that I saw that the one of the top there was a list of like countries whose governments had requested most the most request to YouTube to take down content. Okay, right. Number one was Brazil. Okay, all right. On the number of requests. However, the U.S. was in the top five,
right?
Okay, of those countries. So, you know, I found it quite interesting about how that, that dynamic was there in terms of the government's restricting content, trying to, you know, do censorship, as we mentioned, or whatever. And it was like, you know, the U.S. government was pretty high up on the list. Now, it wasn't that many requests. There's a number, but still, you know, something that found a little bit disconcerting.
I think the general trend of governments to want to control, yeah, the U.S. is not immune to this, and there have been a lot of trends in the last decade and longer, but there have been a lot of trends in the last decade that basically are about trying to take this Wild West internet thing and tame it. And for the most part, I think those are negative trends. I understand why people feel some of it is necessary, but I'm not sure I like how the trade-off is coming out. You know, what I like isn't necessarily the determining factor of anything. So, you know, whatever. And I'm not making any statements whatsoever on the legality of any of this kind of stuff. I'm just talking about what I think should happen but anyway. I think it's time to move on. Let's take a break, and we'll be back talking a little bit about software licenses, which is kind of related, I guess. Anyway, we'll be back after this message.
What do you get when two housewives produce an online poetry journal? Poems celebrating dishwater, breastfeeding, and lunar phases? Quick trips to the pool boy? Maybe. But they like to believe they offer much more than that. There's no telling what you'll get at the No-Tell Motel. But I hear sneaking out and keeping everything hush-hush is kind of sexy, and they're hot for discretion. Having it all keeps our two housewives awfully busy, so they like to stop and smell the posies, spend quality time with their poets, which is why their rendezvous lasts a full 7 days, a new poem each weekday. Each year they slip their room key to 52 poets and indulge in 260 poems. Their spouses' misfortunes are your gains. Meet with them daily at notellmotel.org. They'll be in room 5C, sipping the latest cocktail recommended in Martha Stewart's Living, Scribbling Marginalia.
Okay, so we're back. As I mentioned, there was a court case within the last week where a judge ruled on a, and, you know, forgive me, I'm going to treat this as a very high level for our lawyer friends listening. You know, I didn't read any of the specifics, and I'm not going to engage in arguments about the legal correctness of any of this. Once again, I'm going to talk more about, like, what I think should happen in an ideal world as opposed to what the law actually says. But basically, the scenario was that there was someone who had... roughly, again, I may be wrong on some of the details, but this is the general gist. Someone had bought some software, you know, the old-fashioned boxed hardware, discs, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And at some point in time, he was reselling it on eBay or somewhere else. I forget. He was done with the software. He had uninstalled it from his computers. He was reselling it because he figured, hey, I'm not using this stuff anymore. Maybe somebody else wants it. And just with the same idea that you have with used books, you know, I'll sell the book, someone else will use it. It's no longer producing revenue to the original manufacturer, but it's what's been called the right of first sale, which is the people who create a product and sell it have the right to control what happens to it when they originally sell it, but once they've sold it, it's not theirs anymore. The people who buy it can do what they want with it. But with software, almost exclusively, there are license agreements involved that basically say you are not really buying the software, you are licensing it. And whether it's a click agreement or a shrink wrap agreement that says, you know, that says by opening this package, you agree to these terms, or whether it's by clicking on this, you agree to these terms, you know, amongst those terms are very often restrictions on resale. Not always, but sometimes. And in this particular case, there was. So he tried to resell it. The original manufacturer sued him, and it went back and forth in courts, I guess. And the latest in this agenda is a judge said, you know, there is a license agreement here. The license agreement was agreed to. The license agreement says you can't sell this, so you can't sell this. Which basically, you know, the long and short effect of it is essentially saying that, hey, if one of these license agreements exists, hey, it really does matter what it says. You know, most people click through these things without ever agreeing them. I most recently noticed with one of these, I was buying something on iTunes, and the license agreements had changed, so I had to click through them again. And I noticed, I actually decided, hey, I'll take a peek at this. The license agreement that you have to actually agree to, that most people just click the button and move on and never think about it again, is 60 yes. pages long. 60 pages worth of,
you know,
full
look,
of
I had
you know, and look, I
had a
go ahead.
I had an interesting discussion with a software vendor, okay, about their software, okay, and I'll tell you what the heck happened, okay. Sold a unit, you know, with some software. Okay, actually, you could buy the software without the unit or not. They bought 3 years of support, 4 years of support, whatever the heck up front. The support had expired; they hadn't renewed the support. Okay.
Okay.
Somehow, the PC on which it's installed, the network card breaks. Okay, they put in a new network card. Well, apparently the way that this vendor tracked down the activation of the card was through the MAC address. So when the network card comes up with the wrong MAC address, the software deactivates, doesn't want to work. And I'm like, you know, okay, I'm like, what the hell? So we start calling up the vendor, and the vendor says, well, we can't turn the software back on unless you have support. And I'm like, wait a sec. Let me ask you a question. I'm sorry, but I'm not asking for support assistance. You know, I own this damn... Who owns the damn software? Am I borrowing it? Am I leasing it? Or do I own it? The vendor... I'll tell you what. I set their head spinning. They were trying to go through the LUA for 5 days. They couldn't answer me. After about 5 days of not answering me, they somehow went and said, okay, we'll fire up that unit again. And I'm like, okay.
Well, look.
This is like an exception.
Yeah, no, I understand. And look, there are a couple of things. There's, obviously, if there's if there's an actual contract negotiation and you have lawyers from both sides beat through some sort of agreement, which often happens in like enterprise level software, that's a different situation.
Yes, that's true. But that's a different story.
But I'd say, you know, look, the key here is this is becoming an increasingly common practice. You know, it's in software, and it's in other places as well, where there's some sort of agreement where by clicking on something or by even opening a package, you're agreeing to pages and pages and pages of legal terms that you haven't read and certainly haven't understood. Now, it's easy to argue that, you know, hey, look, that little checkbox says, I certify that I have read and agree to this stuff. And so you are lying by clicking on that button. If you have
But I'm sorry, but that's, you know, has not been held up in court as being really, you know.
Well, I know. This is a potential test case of that, I guess. But look, here's the fundamental thing. If this whole notion of like, hey, the license agreement, you know, these kinds of license agreements really are valid and you are really bound by the terms of them, whether or not you really understood and agreed to them. I mean, what's stopping people from slapping them on anything? Like, you know, the right of first sale for like regular old books. Just print something in the front cover that says, by opening this book, you agree to blah, 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 blah. You know, done.
Right.
You kill the used book market. Make it illegal to sell a used book at that point. They would love that. I mean, but to some degree, the moving to e-books is doing that anyway. But, you know, I think in all of these areas, and for my lawyer friends, I understand why this is in many cases not practical, but I want to say it anyway. There really needs to be something that says a legal agreement of any sort, whether it be, and we've talked about this in the context of mortgages before, but it all applies to these kinds of license agreements too. If both parties or their representatives do not actually understand what the fuck is being agreed to, it should be invalid out of hand. Like, you know, yes. Okay, fine. You want this 60-page license agreement for iTunes to actually be valid? Don't give one little checkbox that says okay and that you're done with it. Make the user actually go through each and every one of those terms, do a little quiz on what it means.
Accept each
one of their terms, maybe give a little quiz to make sure they actually understand it. Don't tell them what the right answer is. Make sure there's actual comprehension there. Now, of course, this comes into the practicalities. This would never, ever, ever fly because
you'd have to do the agreements to be far shorter.
You'd have to make them shorter. You'd have to make them plain English and get rid of legalese. No one's gonna click through and read 60 pages of bullshit to use a program. You know, maybe one or two questions. Maybe, but even then, it's like, come on, look, you know, the reality of software, the reality of any of these kinds of things is once you give it to the user, they can do whatever the fuck they want to with it, regardless of what your user agreement says. Now, it may be against the agreement, you may be able to sue them for it, but screw that. Like, acknowledge reality. Acknowledge that once they get it, it's theirs. And they can do whatever the fuck they want with it. I don't know. And I know that's radical and will never happen. And there are all kinds of reasons why, you know, if you actually required that people understood the contracts they were agreeing to, that it would, you know, bring commerce to a halt or whatever. And of course, it would, you know, kill the lawyering industry. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous, the current state of these things. And, you know, and occasionally I've started reading through these big documents and, you know, maybe I've made it past the first page or something before I find something where I'm like, you know, if I actually thought this really applied, there's no way I would agree to this. This is bullshit. I'm handing over all my rights. I'm saying I'm dramatically restricting what I can and can't do with this thing. Maybe it's better not to have it at all. But then the reality comes that says, A, I'm going to click on this, I'm going to use it, and no one's ever going to check Jack unless I do something militantly abusive. And B, it's not like there are other choices. Anything else out there, for the most part, has similar restrictions on it. Now, in the case of software, there may be open source software that does not have those kind of restrictions, blah, blah, blah. But usually they're crap. You know, not always, but usually. So, yeah, no, I want my fucking iTunes. You know? I don't want some other piece of crap music player. But whatever, I don't know. This kind of thing always makes me mad when I see it. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that, you know, the judge here was wrong. The judge may be absolutely correct in that by current law, this thing should be applicable. And it's just, I see the end results coming out of that are horrible end results. And, you know, the judge may be right about current law, but maybe current law needs to change if that's the case. But it's not going to, of course, because, you know, Congress is all about enabling these things and, you know, putting control in the hands of, you know, the big software publishers and the big media conglomerates and stuff like that. You know, they're not really after, you know, the free flow of information or helping the consumer out in these issues. So it's hopeless. We're all screwed. I'm a curmudgeon.
Okay, anyway, I'll send you a gun so you can commit suicide. Okay, anyway, all right.
You know, or maybe I'll just go into the homemade hut in the middle of the Montana forest and start writing screeds and sending them to newspapers. You know, I was going to say along with package bombs, but no, I'm not going to go that.
No, but that's not very effective as a suicide method. It's just that it reminded me. This week I commented to a woman that they had a stat in the New York Times about the fact that apparently women attempt suicide at a far higher rate than men, like 4 to 5 times, but that men are more effective at the act, okay? Because men usually will use a fucking gun or jump off a building or something and therefore just get it fucking over with. Whereas if women are going to do it, they take overdose on something or whatever, so therefore 80% of the cases they can't close the deal.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to go all Unabomber and Luddite and all that kind of stuff. But still, all this kind of stuff frustrates me.
That is a very warm and fuzzy and comforting thought.
Yeah, I will not harm myself or others in any way.
Yay! Okay. All right. Well, let's take a break.
Yes, let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about BP's finding on the oil spills. So, enjoy your upcoming poem of the week, and we'll be back after this.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by Notel Motel.
Vacationeering, by Ruth Williams. In the exit window on my hotel room, a red cord swinging, a red cord singing. I mistyped. Like this, I kept mislighting myself on vacation. I stole my grandmother's ring, wore it every day. Baedeker heart nostalgic for engagement. Bottle-eyed, I was Turisma, movie-gummed in a panoramic view. In squares, pigeons flew, hymniacal from my palms. My head a cooing flicker, I drew rickshaws wherever I went. I had packed a suitcase full of white handkerchiefs, so I let every man that called to me guide me. To be pickpocketed exotically is to be touched. My white palm at a red cord, exit window along a dark-skinned wrist. So I kissed the foreign men. That was my indulgent appetite, my American largesse. I paid well to make them wait all afternoon.
For more like this, go to notelmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
And we are back. Yvonne, there was an oil spill and BP said something about it. Tell me more.
Well, BP went and published findings of an internal investigation and buried in them, and a whole bunch of people missed this until, you know, some people went, actually, it was a pretty big findings document. Well, that apparently the guys on the rig had actually been able to activate the blowout preventer and actually had been able to close the flow of the oil. What happened was that right when they did it, gas had shot through it past, and it was coming up to the rig. Now, there are a couple of procedures to be able to deal with that, okay, eventuality. You could do it in two ways. Normally, they would let it, like, drift into the rig, because if you could shoot it overboard because it was combined gas along with some fluid, well, then you could get fined by the EPA, whatever, because, you know, you were throwing oil overboard into the ocean. So they, not knowing and not really realizing at the moment, at the instant, how much gas had come up, okay, they made the wrong decision, and they let the gas actually get onto the rig, okay? And that's when it was so much gas that it went, the gas reached the engines, that the generators that actually run the rig, spark in there, lit it up, boom, get explosion. And when, because they hadn't, because the way that they did it, they had closed the first, there was a first rubber seal they had. Then they had another seal that they could have hit, but because the rig tore off the whole thing, well, that's why the rubber seal that they had put in, you know, opened, and that's why all the oil started leaking out. But they were so close at actually having capped this thing and not having the entire spill. Oops. Just one split decision, you know, throw that oil overboard instead of having it under all that gas overboard instead of having it under rig, we wouldn't be talking about this.
Well, and that's how most of these things work, frankly. I mean, there's like, you have to have, yeah, there are a bunch of safety precautions in these things, and in order to have anything go wrong, a whole bunch of things have to go wrong. It's not just one thing goes wrong and all of a sudden you have a catastrophe. It's this thing gets missed over here, then that thing gets missed over here, and then this thing, and they all have to come together in exactly the right way. And if any one of them had veered or people had decided X instead of Y, you avoid the issue. And, you know, unfortunately, that's how life is in general. You know, one little missed decision can have huge consequences. And you try to put in all kinds of mechanisms to minimize that, and, you know, have as many sort of safety valves and places where you can actually afford to make a mistake and it's not that bad, you know. But, you know, I mean, in general, that's what safety devices are about. You know, like, if we were all perfect, you wouldn't need any safety devices. Everything would always go exactly according to plan. But, you know, safety in general is about making things resilient so you can afford to make mistakes and still not have things go catastrophically wrong.
Yep. But, well, you know, it shit happened. You know, what are we going to do?
Well, and you know, there was that little, you know, there was that other mini little golf thing that went on a couple weeks ago and turned out not to be that bad. That just shows, you know, these things do happen. You know, they happen on a regular basis. Yep. And anyone saying, you know, we're so, we're good at this, we don't really have to worry about it, you know, that's full of shit. I mean, that things will happen. And so that's why you want the extra, if the potential consequences of something going wrong are very, very bad, then you want to have many extra layers of protection in place for when those things do go bad.
No, working on an oil rig is dangerous business. Let's just put it that way. Okay.
This is one of the examples of those places where I don't give a crap how well paid they are. I don't want that job. You know?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Okay.
Okay. So anything,
all right. So that was that on the rig.
Okay. Know? So let's talk briefly. Our last topic of the day is this whole thing that was going on with this big hullabaloo over some wacky off the wall minister guy somewhere in Florida. They're always in Florida, aren't they, Yvonne?
Yep, absolutely. We got a monopoly on the wackos.
Anyway, he was basically going to commemorate 9/11 by burning a bunch of Korans. And this blew up into a big shitstorm.
And he had a whole thing like drawn that said like a truck like a it looked like a, the back of a trailer, and it had this thing. He called it Burn a Koran Day.
Yeah,
the whole thing. Oh, it was wonderful.
So look, yeah. I think this particular instance is a failure in so many ways by so many people. Like, here's what. First of all, this guy, he's got a congregation of like 20 people. This is like a small-time guy with not a lot of people following him. First of all, you know, he's being a nut job. He's trying to get attention. He's trying to incite, you know, stuff. Ignore the fucker, you know? But no one would ignore
him. I think the problem with this, there was another guy who did something like this a couple of years ago. The thing is that the press didn't pay attention to him.
Yeah.
Okay? Therefore, it just went unnoticed. For some freaking reason, they decided to fucking, you know, give this guy all this fucking...
I've heard
publicity.
I've heard the argument made by a couple folks talking about this, that, you know, in this day and age, the press, whether or not the press immediately pays attention is irrelevant, because it's going to get posted on the internet anyway. It'll be on YouTube, and people find out stuff anyway. I think that's a cop out. You know,
okay, that is a big cop out.
If that does happen, and then it becomes a big deal, then report on it. You know, maybe
right.
If it's warranted. But, you know, for the most part, this is a nut job. Let him go be a nut job on his own time, and there's no reason to pay attention to him, A, number one. B, okay, now he's got attention. Now we got, you know, various people aggravating and saying, look, if this happens, it's going to cause all kinds of problems. It's going to, the Muslim world is going to go nuts about it. There'll be additional violence. Our troops will be in danger, blah, 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 blah. And then we had, like, you know, people in Obama's government, you know, basically calling the guy up and asking him not to do this. And making
and listen,
it an even
I'll
bigger,
tell you something. No, but I'll tell you this. But now, look, after the story had actually blown up and been that big, okay, where it was all over the press, I actually did not find it inappropriate that they did so.
Look, I'll tell you why. There are a couple things. First of all, I think the guy's a fucking idiot for wanting to do this stuff and doing it.
I agree.
But at the same time, it's his goddamn fucking right to burn some Korans.
I agree.
Nobody should be stopping him from doing that.
Wait. But nobody did.
Like police were coming down on him, but
exactly.
I know, but look, here's the thing. You know, I almost say, like, this guy was doing it for the wrong reasons, but, like, this is very similar to the Let's All Draw Muhammad Day. You know, nobody should get fucking offended over burning their books. Yeah, like, book burning is something I think is stupid. It's irrelevant. It's like trying to shut down information. I think the people who do it are idiots. But on the other hand, when people get offended at their stuff being burned, it makes me want to go out and do it. Like, I want to go out.
I understand.
You know, I
understand,
want to go. Every time people start yelling about burning the American flag and how, like, oh, this is an offense to everything, I'm like, you got to be fucking kidding me. That whole argument makes me want to go out and burn some flags. This whole thing makes me want to say, you know, yes, this guy's an idiot for wanting to burn his Korans because he's making a statement about, you know, how evil Muslims are or some bullshit like that. But I wouldn't mind going out and burning some Korans to make a statement of, like, nobody should be getting fucking offended by this. And by the way, I'll burn some Bibles at the same time. I'll burn, you know, a bunch of other crap. You know, I'll happily throw some American flags into the mix. These are, like, physical objects that, you know, hey, if I want to make a bonfire, I can make a fucking bonfire. Nobody should be getting offended about it, you know, just by the physical stuff getting burnt. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Now, yes, he's simultaneously making a statement about, you know, these religions are somehow bad. And frankly, you know, I'm not a religious guy. I think in general religions are a bad thing. I won't put it on any particular religion. I think they're all bad, you know, but because they fundamentally play into believing something other than, you know, straight out reality. You know, but
Oh boy, that's what. Yeah, let's see the feedback on this one. Yeah, okay, well, here we go.
You know, but anyway, like, look. I, my fundamental view of religion is, as long as you keep it to yourself and it helps make you a better person, great. Have fun. But it's still, you know, if you're believing in, you know, sort of imaginary beings that are somehow involved in the universe, you're stupid. Anyway, you know, in some way, shape, or form. Oh, and I apologize to my mom, who's a minister and might be listening. But, you know, but again, my sort of...
Okay.
Anyway, getting back to my actual point, we just guaranteed that
at some point Sam is not running for office anytime soon. But that's okay.
Along with my organized event for next weekend, when I'll be burning all the religious texts I can find, plus, you know, flags of as many nations as I can find at the same time, and I'll put it on YouTube. And yeah, well. Okay, maybe not. But
actually, that would be kind of cool if you did that. Yes. Anyway, but let me just clarify one thing. It's like, for example, I don't have a problem with the fact that I believe it should be absolutely everybody's legal right to burn a book or anything, whatever the fuck you want. That's fine, no problem. I actually did not have a problem with the administration calling this guy up and asking him not to do it, because just simply saying, look, dude, it's your right to do it. Okay? You can do it. If you want to do it, go ahead. However, are asking you, please, not to do it, because it would be harmful. It would not be helpful. Please just don't do it.
By even talking to them, they give the guy unnecessary attention and elevate his cause. The right thing.
But he already had attention.
But the right thing to do is then let him do the damn thing and then condemn it and say it's stupid. And then distance yourself from him and say he doesn't represent us. But, you know, getting there in the dirt and calling this guy up and saying and giving him even the time of day is just ridiculous. I mean, this is some fringe whack job who is intentionally trying to aggravate things. And you just played into him and gave him everything he fucking wanted, you know, you know, it's the same kind of bullshit as, I was going to go off topic, but I don't know. It's just all of this stuff's annoying to me. It's like, I don't know. It just seems like this is the kind of thing where, first of all, it's the same kind of thing as the thing with the mosque in New York or whatever. The right answer is... It's none of our
community center.
Whatever. The answer is it's none of our business what these people do. Let them do whatever the hell they want. You know, and that's the general right answer to everybody. You know, as long as they are not physically hurting anybody else, let them do whatever the hell they want. And, you know, that includes, like, you know, it includes whack jobs, you know, doing hateful things that I don't support. But, you know, let them be hateful as long as they're not actually hurting somebody. You know, as long as they're burning a book and not burning a Muslim, let them at it, you know. I don't know.
Okay. All right. So, okay. So Sam went off. Did an Ivanbo today. Okay.
I will state again that I have the utmost respect for all of the people who have religious beliefs out there. I do not share them, and I believe you are wrong. But I respect your right to have your belief. And as long as it makes you a better person, it's probably a good thing for you. If it makes you feel stronger and better able to handle the world, then it's a good positive influence on you. I just think that for most people, it's not necessarily actually helpful. But whatever. Whether or not it's helpful or not is actually a very different discussion from whether or not it's right or not. And I found a lot of people that are... you know, really into these things, actually make that distinction where it's similar to like placebos. You know, if it helps you in some way be more mentally grounded, happier, whatever, then actually who the hell cares if it's quote-unquote right or not, or correct, or independently verifiable, or scientifically true? You know, if it, you know, if believing in fairies makes you a better person and makes you happier, then good on you, you know? And I happen to personally hold value on objective truth, but a lot of people, you know, that's really secondary. And if it helps them, it helps them. And I guess that's okay. Anyway.
Okay. All right. And on that note,
I think we should wrap it up.
Yes.
Okay.
Before we inflame whatever remaining, you know, audience we have today. Yeah. There you go.
If you have any suggestions for things I should burn next week, you know, email abelsmay@abelsmay.com and let me know. Thank you for joining us. Tell your friends to listen to. We appreciate everything.
I have a couple of things you can burn. I'll leave you a list. There you go.
Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.